funny brown hair dye. I shear off large chunks of my hair. All the blonde goes into a plastic bag. Air hits the back of my neck, and my head feels light, like a balloon. I roll it around a few times to enjoy. I apply the color, check my watch, and linger in the doorway, looking out over miles of flatland pocked with fast food restaurants and motel chains. I can feel an Indian crying. Nick would hate that joke. Derivative! And then he'd add, although the word derivative as a criticism is itself derivative. I've got to get him out of my head. He still steps on my lines from 100 miles away. I wash my hair in the sink, the warm water making me sweat, and then back in the car with my bag of hair and trash. I put on a pair of outdated wire-rim glasses and look in the rearview mirror and smile again. Nick and I would never have married if I had looked like this when we met. All this could have been avoided if I were less pretty. Item 34, change look. Check. I'm not sure, exactly, how to be dead Amy. I'm trying to figure out what that means for me, what I become for the next few months. Anyone, I suppose, except people I've already been. Amazing Amy. Preppy 80s girl. Ultimate frisbee granola, and blushing ingenue, and witty Hepburnian sophisticate. Brainy ironic girl, and boho babe. The latest version of frisbee granola. Cool girl, and loved wife, and unloved wife, and vengeful scorned wife. Diary Amy. I hope you liked Diary Amy. She was meant to be likable. Meant for someone like you to like her. She's easy to like. I've never understood why that's considered a compliment. That just anyone could like you. No matter. I thought the entries turned out nicely. And it wasn't simple. I had to maintain an affable, if somewhat naive, persona. A woman who loved her husband and could see some of his flaws, otherwise she'd be too much of a sap, but was sincerely devoted to him, all the while leading the reader, in this case the cops, I am so eager for them to find it, toward the conclusion that Nick was indeed planning to kill me. So many clues to unpack. So many surprises ahead. Nick always mocked my endless lists. It's like you make sure you're never satisfied, that there's always something else to be perfected, instead of just enjoying the moment. But who wins here? I win, because my list, the master list entitled Fuck Nick Dunn, was exacting. It was the most complete, fastidious list that has ever been created. On my list was write diary entries for 2005 to 2012. 7 years of diary entries. Not every day, but twice monthly, at least. Do you know how much discipline that takes? Would cool girl Amy be able to do that? To research each week's current events, to cross-consult with my old daily planners to make sure I forgot nothing important, then to reconstruct how Diary Amy would react to each event? It was fun, mostly. I'd wait for Nick to leave for the bar, or to go meet his mistress, the ever-texting, gum-chewing, vapid mistress, with her acrylic nails and the sweatpants with logos across the butt. She isn't like this exactly, but she might as well be. And I'd pour some coffee or open a bottle of wine, pick one of my 32 different pens, and rewrite my life a little. It is true that I sometimes hated Nick less while I was doing this. A giddy, cool girl perspective will do that. Sometimes Nick would come home, stinking of beer or of the hand sanitizer he wiped on his body post-mistress coitus, never entirely erased the stink, though. She must have one rank pussy. And smile guiltily at me, be all sweet and hangdog with me, and I'd almost think, I won't go through with this. And then I'd picture him with her, in her stripper thong, letting him degrade her because she was pretending to be a cool girl. She was pretending to love blowjobs and football and getting wasted. And I'd think, I am married to an imbecile. I'm married to a man who will always choose that. And when he gets bored with this dumb twat, he'll just find another girl who is pretending to be that girl, and he'll never have to do anything hard in his life. Resolve stiffened. 152 entries total, and I don't think I ever lose her voice. I wrote her very carefully, Diary Amy. She is designed to appeal to the cops, to appeal to the public should portions be released. They have to read this diary like it's some sort of gothic tragedy. A wonderful, good-hearted woman. Whole life ahead of her, everything going for her, whatever else they say about women who die. Chooses the wrong mate and pays the ultimate price. They have to like me. Her. My parents are worried, of course, but how can I feel sorry for them, since they made me this way and then deserted me? They never, ever fully appreciated the fact that they were earning money from my existence, that I should have been getting royalties. Then, after they siphoned off my money, my feminist parents let Nick bundle me off to Missouri like I was some piece of chattel, some mail-order bride, some property exchange. Gave me a fucking cuckoo clock to remember them by. Thanks for 36 years of service. They deserve to think I'm dead, because that's practically the state they consigned me to. No money, no home, no friends. They deserve to suffer, too. If you can't take care of me while I'm alive, you have made me dead anyway. Just like Nick, who destroyed and rejected the real me a piece at a time. You're too serious, Amy. You're too uptight, Amy. You overthink things. You analyze too much. You're no fun anymore. You make me feel useless, Amy. You make me feel bad, Amy. He took away chunks of me with blasé swipes. My independence, my pride, my esteem. I gave, and he took, and took. He giving-treed me out of existence. That whore. He picked that little whore over me. He killed my soul, which should be a crime. Actually, it is a crime. According to me, at least.
Nick Dunn. 7 days gone. I had to phone Tanner, my brand new lawyer, mere hours after I'd hired him, and say the words that would make him regret taking my money. I think my wife is framing me. I couldn't see his face, but I could imagine it. The eye roll, the grimace, the weariness of a man who hears nothing but lies for a living.
Well, he finally said after a gaping pause, I'll be there first thing tomorrow morning, and we will sort this out, everything on the table. And in the meantime, sit tight, okay? Go to sleep and sit tight.
Go took his advice. She popped 2 sleeping pills and left me just before 11, while I literally sat tight, in an angry ball on her couch. Every so often I'd go outside and glare at the woodshed, my hands on my hips, as if it were a predator I could scare off. I'm not sure what I thought I was accomplishing, but I couldn't stop myself. I could stay seated for 5 minutes tops, before I'd have to go back outside and stare. I had just come back inside when a knock rattled the back door. Fucking Christ! Not quite midnight. Cops would come to the front, right? And reporters had yet to stake out goes. This would change in a matter of days, hours. I was standing, unnerved, undecided, in the living room when the banging came again, louder, and I cursed under my breath, tried to get myself angry instead of scared. Deal with it, Dunn. I flung open the door. It was Andy. It was goddamn Andy. Pretty as a picture. Dressed up for the occasion. Still not getting it. That she was going to put my neck right in the noose. Right in the noose, Andy! I yanked her inside and she stared at my hand on her arm. You are going to put my neck right in the fucking noose. I came to the back door, she said. When I stared her down, she didn't apologize. She steeled herself. I could literally see her features harden. I needed to see you, Nick. I told you. I told you I had to see you or talk to you every day. And today you disappeared. Straight to voicemail. Straight to voicemail. Straight to voicemail. If you don't hear from me, it's because I can't talk, Andy. Jesus, I was in New York getting a lawyer. He'll be here first thing tomorrow. You got a lawyer? That was what kept you so busy that you couldn't call me for 10 seconds? I wanted to smack her. I took a breath. I had to cut things off with Andy. It wasn't just Tanner's warning I had in mind. My wife knew me. She knew I'd do almost anything to avoid dealing with confrontation. Amy was depending on me to be stupid, to let the relationship linger, and to ultimately be caught. I had to end it. But I had to do it perfectly. Make her believe that this was the decent thing. He's actually given me some important advice, I began. Advice I can't ignore. I'd been so sweet and doting just last night at my mandatory meeting in our pretend fort. I'd made so many promises trying to calm her down. She wouldn't see this coming. She wouldn't take this well. Advice? Good. Is it to stop being such an asshole to me? I felt the rage rise up, that this was already turning into a high school fight. A 34-year-old man in the middle of the worst night of my life, and I was having a meet-me-by-the-lockers squabble with a pissed-off girl. I shook her once, hard, a tiny droplet of spit landing on her lower lip. You don't get it, Andy. This isn't some joke. This is my life. I need you, she said, looking down at her hands. I know I keep saying that, but I do. I can't do it, Nick. I can't go on like this. I'm falling apart. I'm so scared all the time. She was scared. I pictured the police knocking, and here I was with a girl I'd been fucking the morning my wife went missing. I'd sought her out that day. I had never gone to her apartment since that first night, but I went right there that morning because I'd spent hours with my heart pounding behind my ears, trying to get myself to say the words to Amy, I want a divorce. I am in love with someone else. We have to end. I can't pretend to love you. I can't do the anniversary thing. It would actually be more wrong than cheating on you in the first place. I know, debatable. But while I was gathering the guts, Amy had preempted me with her speech about still loving me. Lying bitch. And I lost my nerve. I felt like the ultimate cheat and coward, and the catch-22. I craved Andy to make me feel better. But Andy was no longer the antidote to my nerves. Quite the opposite. The girl was wrapping herself around me even now, oblivious as a weed. Look, Andy, I said, a big exhale, not letting her sit down, keeping her near the door. You are such a special person to me. You've handled all this so amazingly well. Make her want to keep you safe.
I mean,
her voice wavered.
I feel so sorry for Amy, which is insane. I know I don't even have a right to feel sad for her or worried. And on top of feeling sad, I feel so guilty.
She leaned her head against my chest. I retreated, held her at arm's length so she had to look at me. Well, that's one thing I think we can fix. I think we need to fix, I said, pulling up Tanner's exact words.
We should go to the police, she said. I'm your alibi for that morning. We'll just tell them.
You're my alibi for about an hour that morning, I said. No one saw or heard Amy after 11 p.m. the night before. The police can say I killed her before I saw you.
That's disgusting.
I shrugged. I thought, for a second, about telling her about Amy. My wife is framing me, and quickly dismissed it. Andy couldn't play the game on Amy's level. She'd want to be my teammate, and she'd drag me down. Andy would be a liability going forward. I put my hands on her arms again, relaunched my speech. Look, Andy, we are both under an amazing amount of stress and pressure, and a lot of it is brought on by our feelings of guilt. Andy, the thing is, we are good people. We were attracted to each other, I think, because we both have similar values. Of treating people right, of doing the right thing, and right now we know what we are doing is wrong. Her broken, hopeful expression changed. The wet eyes, the gentle touch, they disappeared. A weird flicker. A window shade pulled down. Something darker in her face. We need to end this, Andy. I think we both know that. It's so hard, but it's the decent thing to do. I think it's the advice we'd give ourselves if we could think straight. As much as I love you, I am still married to Amy. I have to do the right thing.
And if she's found?
She didn't say dead or alive. That's something we can discuss then.
Then? And until then, what?
I shrugged helplessly. Until then, nothing.
What, Nick? I fuck off until then?
That's an ugly choice of words.
But that's what you mean.
She smirked. I'm sorry, Andy. I don't think it's right for me to be with you right now. It's dangerous for you. It's dangerous for me. It doesn't sit well with my conscience. It's just how I feel.
Yeah. You know how I feel?
Her eyes burst over, tears streaming down her cheeks.
I feel like a dumb college girl that you started fucking because you were bored with your wife, and I made it extremely convenient for you. You could go home to Amy and eat dinner with her and play around in your little bar that you bought with her money. And then you could meet me at your dying dad's house and jack off on my tits because, poor you, your mean wife would never let you do that.
Andy, you know that's not...
What a shit you are. What kind of man are you?
Andy, please, contain this, Nick. I think because you haven't been able to talk about this stuff, everything has gotten a little bigger in your mind, a little...
Fuck you! You think I'm some dumb kid? Some pathetic student you can manage? I stick by you through all this. This talk about how you might be a murderer. And as soon as it's a little tough for you? No. No. You don't get to talk about conscience and decency and guilt and feel like you were doing the right thing. Do you understand me? Because you are a cheating, cowardly, selfish shit.
She turned away from me, sobbing, sucking in loud gulps of moist air and breathing out mules, and I tried to stop her. I grabbed her by the arm. Andy, this isn't how I want to.
Hands off me! Hands off me!
She moved toward the back door, and I could see what would happen. The hatred and embarrassment coming off her like heat. I knew she'd open a bottle of wine or two, and then she'd tell a friend or her mother, and it would spread like an infection. I moved in front of her, barring her way to the door. Andy, please. And she reached up to slap me, and I grabbed her arm just for defense. Our joined arms moved up and down and up and down like crazed dance partners.
Let me go, Nick, or I swear.
Just stay for a minute. Just listen to me.
You let me go!
She moved her face toward mine like she was going to kiss me. She bit me. I jerked back, and she shot out the door.
Amy Elliott Dunn, 5 days gone. You may call me Ozark Amy. I am ensconced in the Hideaway Cabins. Has ever there been a more apt name? And I sit quietly, watching all the levers and latches I put in place do their work. I have shed myself of Nick, and yet I think about him more than ever. Last night, at 10:04 p.m., my disposable cell phone rang. That's right, Nick, you're not the only one who knows the old secret cell phone trick. It was the alarm company. I didn't answer, of course, but now I know Nick has made it as far as his dad's house. Clue 3. I changed the code 2 weeks before I disappeared and listed my secret cell as the first number to call. I can picture Nick, my clue in hand, entering his dad's dusty, stale house, fumbling with the alarm code. Then the time runs out. Beep, beep, beep. His cell is listed as the backup if I can't be reached. And I obviously can't. So he tripped the alarm, and he talked to someone at the alarm company, and so he's on record as being in his dad's house after my disappearance, which is good for the plan. It's not foolproof, but it doesn't have to be foolproof. I've already left enough for the police to make a case against Nick. The staged scene, the mopped-up blood, the credit card bills. All these will be found by even the most incompetent police departments. Noelle will spill my pregnancy news very soon, if she hasn't already. It is enough, especially once the police discover Able Andy, able to suck cock on command. So all these extras, they're just bonus fuck yous, amusing booby traps. I love that I am a woman with booby traps. Ellen Abbott is part of my plan, too. The biggest cable crime news show in the country. I adore Ellen Abbott. I love how protective and maternal she gets about all the missing women on her show, and how rabid dog vicious she is once she seizes on a suspect, usually the husband. She is America's voice of female righteousness, which is why I'd really like her to take on my story. The public must turn against Nick. It's as much a part of his punishment as prison. For darling Nicky, who spends so much time worrying about people liking him, to know he is universally hated. And I need Ellen to keep me apprised of the investigation. Have the police found my diary yet? Do they know about Andy? Have they discovered the bumped-up life insurance? This is the hardest part. Waiting for stupid people to figure things out. I flip on the TV in my little room once an hour, eager to see if Ellen has picked up my story. She has to. I can't see how she could resist. I am pretty. Nick is pretty. And I have the amazing Amy hook. Just before noon, she flares up, promising a special report. I stay tuned, glaring at the TV. Hurry up, Ellen. Or, hurry up, Ellen. We have that in common. We are both people and entities. Amy and Amy. Ellen and Ellen. Tampon commercial, detergent commercial, maxi pad commercial, Windex commercial. You'd think all women do is clean and bleed. And finally, there I am, my debut. I know from the second Ellen shows up, glowering like Elvis, that this is going to be good. A few gorgeous photos of me, a still shot of Nick with his insane, love me, grin from the first press conference. News. There has been a fruitless, multi-site search for the beautiful young woman with everything going for her. News. Nick fucked himself already, taking candid photos with a townie during a search for me. This is clearly what hooked Ellen, because she is pissed. There he is, Nick in his sweetie pie mode, the I am the beloved of all women mode, his face pressed against the strange woman's, as if they're happy hour buddies. What an idiot. I love it. Ellen Abbott is making much of the fact that our backyard leads right to the Mississippi River. I wonder then if it has been leaked, the search history on Nick's computer, which I made sure includes a study on the locks and dams of the Mississippi, as well as a Google search of the words body float Mississippi River. Not to put too fine a point on it. It could happen, possibly, unlikely, but there is precedent, that the river might sweep my body all the way to the ocean. I've actually felt sad for myself, picturing my slim, naked, pale body floating just beneath the current, a colony of snails attached to one bare leg, my hair trailing like seaweed, until I reach the ocean and drift down, down, down to the bottom, my waterlogged flesh peeling off in soft streaks, me slowly disappearing into the current like a watercolor, until just the bones are left. But I'm a romantic. In real life, if Nick had killed me, I think he would have just rolled my body into a trash bag and driven me to one of the landfills in this 60-mile radius. Just dispose of me. He'd have even taken a few items with him. The broken toaster that's not worth fixing, a pile of old VHS tapes he's been meaning to toss, to make the trip efficient. I'm learning to live fairly efficiently myself. A girl has to budget when she's dead. I had time to plan, to stockpile some cash. I gave myself a good 12 months between deciding to disappear and disappearing. That's why most people get caught in murders. They don't have the discipline to wait. I have $10,200 in cash. If I'd cleared out $10,200 in a month, that would have been noticed. But I collected cash forwards from credit cards I took out in Nick's name, the cards that would make him look like a greedy little cheat, and I siphoned off another $4,400 from our bank accounts over the months, withdrawals of $200 or $300, nothing to attract attention. I stole from Nick, from his pockets, $20 here, $10 there, a slow, deliberate stockpile. It's like that budgeting plan where you put the money you'd spend on your morning Starbucks into a jar, and at the end of the year you have $1,500. And I'd always steal from the tip jar when I went to the bar. I'm sure Nick blamed Go, and Go blamed Nick, and neither of them said anything because they felt too sorry for the other. But I am careful with money, my point. I have enough to live on until I kill myself. I'm going to hide out long enough to watch Lance Nicholas Dunn become a worldwide pariah, to watch Nick be arrested, tried, marched off to prison, bewildered in an orange jumpsuit and handcuffs. To watch Nick squirm and sweat and swear he is innocent and still be stuck. Then, I will travel south along the river, where I will meet up with my body, my pretend floating other Amy body in the Gulf of Mexico. I will sign up for a booze cruise, something to get me out into the deep end, but nothing requiring identification. I will drink a giant ice-wet shaker of gin, and I will swallow sleeping pills, and when no one is looking, I'll drop silently over the side, my pockets full of Virginia Woolf rocks. It requires discipline to drown oneself, but I have discipline in spades. My body may never be discovered, or it may resurface weeks, months later, eroded to the point that my death can't be time-stamped. And I will provide a last bit of evidence to make sure Nick is marched to the padded cross, the prison table, where he'll be pumped with poison and die. I'd like to wait around and see him dead, but given the state of our justice system, that may take years, and I have neither the money nor the stamina. I'm ready to join the hopes. I did veer from my budget a bit already. I spent about $500 on items to nice up my cabin. Good sheets, a decent lamp, towels that don't stand up by themselves from years of bleaching. But I try to accept what I'm offered. There's a man a few cabins away, a taciturn fellow, a hippie dropout of the Grizzly Adams homemade granola variety. Full beard and turquoise rings, and a guitar he plays on his back deck some nights. His name, he says, is Jeff, just like my name, I say, is Lydia. We smile only in passing, but he brings me fish. A couple of times now, he brings a fish by, freshly stinking but scaled and headless, and presents it to me in a giant icy freezer bag. "Fresh fish," he says, knocking, and if I don't open the door immediately, he disappears, leaving the bag on my front doorstep. I cook the fish in a decent skillet I bought at yet another Walmart, and it's not bad, and it's free. "Where do you get all the fish?" I ask him.
"At the gettin' place," he says.
Dorothy, who works the front desk and has already taken a liking to me, brings tomatoes from her garden. I eat the tomatoes that smell like the earth and the fish that smells like the lake. I think that by next year, Nick will be locked away in a place that smells only of the inside. Fabricated odors, deodorant and old shoes and starchy foods, stale mattresses. His worst fear, his own personal panic dream. He finds himself in jail, realizing he did nothing wrong, but unable to prove it. Nick's nightmares have always been about being wronged, about being trapped, a victim of forces beyond his control. He always gets up after these dreams, paces around the house, then puts on clothes and goes outside, wanders along the roads near our house, into a park, a Missouri park, a New York park, going wherever he wants. He is a man of the outdoors, if he is not exactly outdoorsy. He's not a hiker, a camper. He doesn't know how to make fires. He wouldn't know how to catch fish and present them to me. But he likes the option. He likes the choice. He wants to know he can go outside, even if he chooses instead to sit on the couch and watch cage fighting for 3 hours. I do wonder about the little slut. Andy. I thought she'd last exactly 3 days. Then she wouldn't be able to resist sharing. I know she likes to share because I'm one of her friends on Facebook. My profile name is invented. Madeline Elster, ha. My photo is stolen from a pop-up ad for mortgages. Blonde, smiling, benefiting from historically low interest rates. 4 months ago, Madeline randomly asked to be Andy's friend, and Andy, like a hapless puppy, accepted. So I know the little girl fairly well, along with all her minutiae enthralled friends, who take many naps and love Greek yogurt and Pinot Grigio and enjoy sharing that with one another. Andy is a good girl, meaning she doesn't post photos of herself partying, and she never posts lascivious messages, which is unfortunate. When she's exposed as Nick's girlfriend, I'd prefer the media find photos of her doing shots or kissing girls or flashing her thong. This would more easily cement her as the homewrecker she is. Homewrecker. My home was disheveled but not yet wrecked when she first started kissing my husband, reaching inside his trousers, slipping into bed with him, taking his cock in her mouth, all the way to the root so he feels extra big as she gags, taking it in her ass, deep, taking cum shots to the face and tits, then licking it off, yum. Taking, definitely taking, her type would. They've been together for over a year, every holiday. I went through his credit card statements, the real ones, to see what he got her for Christmas, but he's been shockingly careful. I wonder what it feels like to be a woman whose Christmas present must be bought in cash. Liberating. Being an undocumented girl means being the girl who doesn't have to call the plumber, or listen to gripes about work, or remind and remind him to pick up some goddamn cat food. I need her to break. I need, 1, Noelle to tell someone about my pregnancy, 2, the police to find the diary, 3, Andy to tell someone about the affair. I suppose I had her stereotyped, that a girl who posts updates on her life 5 times a day for anyone to see would have no real understanding of what a secret is. She's made occasional grazing mentions of my husband online. Saw Mr. Hunky today. Oh, do tell. When do we get to meet this stud? Bridget likes this. A kiss from a dreamy guy makes everything better. Too true. When do we get to meet Dreamy? Bridget likes this. But she's been surprisingly discreet for a girl of her generation. She's a good girl. For a cunt. I can picture her, that heart-shaped face tilted to one side, the gently furrowed brow. I just want you to know I'm on your side, Nick. I'm here for you. Probably baked him cookies. The Ellen Abbott cameras are now panning the volunteer center, which looks a little shabby. A correspondent is talking about how my disappearance has rocked this tiny town. And behind her, I can see a table lined with homemade casseroles and cakes for poor Nicky. Even now, the asshole has women taking care of him. Desperate women spotting an opening. A good-looking, vulnerable man. And fine, he may have killed his wife, but we don't know that. Not for sure. For now, it's a relief just to have a man to cook for. The 40-something equivalent of driving your bike past the cute boy's house. They are showing Nick's grinning cell phone photo again. I can picture the towny slut in her lonely, glistening kitchen, a trophy kitchen bought with alimony money, mixing and baking while having an imaginary conversation with Nick. No, I'm 43, actually. No, really, I am. No, I don't have men swarming all over me. I really don't. The men in town aren't that interesting. Most of them. I get a burst of jealousy toward that woman with her cheek against my husband's. She is prettier than me as I am now. I eat Hershey bars and float in the pool for hours under a hot sun, the chlorine turning my flesh rubbery as a seal's. I'm tan, which I've never been before. At least not a dark, proud, deep tan. A tanned skin is a damaged skin, and no one likes a wrinkled girl. I spent my life slick with SPF. But I let myself darken a bit before I disappeared, and now, 5 days in, I'm on my way to Brown.
Brown as a berry, old Dorothy, the manager, says. You are brown as a berry, girl, she says with delight when I come in to pay next week's rent in cash.
I have dark skin, my mouse-colored helmet cut, the smart girl glasses. I gained 12 pounds in the months before my disappearance, carefully hidden in roomy sundresses, not that my inattentive husband would notice, and already another 2 pounds since. I was careful to have no photos taken of me in the months before I disappeared, so the public will know only pale, thin Amy. I am definitely not that anymore. I can feel my bottom move sometimes, on its own, when I walk. A wiggle and a jiggle, wasn't that some old saying? I never had either before. My body was a beautiful, perfect economy, every feature calibrated, everything in balance. I don't miss it. I don't miss men looking at me. It's a relief to walk into a convenience store and walk right back out, without some hangabout in sleeveless flannel leering as I leave, some muttered bit of misogyny slipping from him like a nacho cheese burp. Now, no one is rude to me, but no one is nice to me either. No one goes out of their way, not overly, not really, not the way they used to. I am the opposite of Amy.
Nick Dunn. 8 days gone. As the sun came up, I held an ice cube to my cheek. Hours later, and I could still feel the bite, two little staple-shaped creases. I couldn't go after Andy, a worse risk than her wrath, so I finally phoned her. Voicemail. Contain. This must be contained. Andy, I am so sorry. I don't know what to do. I don't know what's going on. Please forgive me. Please? I shouldn't have left a voicemail, but then I thought, she may have hundreds of my voicemails saved for all I know. Good God. If she played a hit list of the raunchiest, nastiest, smittenest, any woman on any jury would send me away just for that. It's one thing to know I'm a cheat, and another to hear my heavy teacher voice telling a young co-ed about my giant, hard... I blushed in the dawn light. The ice cube melted. I sat on Go's front steps, began phoning Andy every 10 minutes. Got nothing. I was sleepless, my nerves barbed-wired, when Boney pulled into the driveway at 6:12 a.m. I said nothing as she walked toward me, bearing two styrofoam cups. Hey, Nick. I brought you some coffee. Just came over to check on you. I bet. I know you're probably reeling from the news about the pregnancy. She made an elaborate show of pouring two creamers into my coffee, the way I like it, and handed it to me. What's that? She said, pointing to my cheek. What do you mean? I mean, Nick, what is wrong with your face? There's a giant pink... She leaned in closer, grabbed my chin. It's like a bite mark. It must be hives. I get hives when I'm stressed. Mm-hmm. She stirred her coffee. You do know I'm on your side, right, Nick? Right. I am. Truly. I wish you'd trust me. I'm getting to the point where I won't be able to help you if you don't trust me. I know that sounds like a cop line, but it's the truth. We sat in a strange, semi-companionable silence, sipping coffee. Hey, so I wanted you to know before you hear it anywhere, she said brightly. We found Amy's purse.
What?
Yep. No cash left, but her ID, cell phone. In Hannibal, of all places. On the banks of the river, south of the steamboat landing. Our guess, someone wanted to make it look like it had been tossed in the river by the perp on the way out of town, heading over the bridge into Illinois.
Make it look like?
It had never been fully submerged. There are fingerprints still at the top, near the zipper. Now, sometimes fingerprints can hold on, even in water, but I'll spare you the science. I'll just say, the theory is, this purse was kinda settled on the banks to make sure it was found.
Sounds like you're telling me this for a reason, I said.
The fingerprints we found were yours, Nick, which isn't that crazy. Men get into their wives' purses all the time, but still...
She laughed, as if she got a great idea.
I gotta ask, you haven't been to Hannibal recently, have you?
She said it with such casual confidence, I had a flash. A police tracker hidden somewhere in the undercarriage of my car released to me the morning I went to Hannibal. Why exactly would I go to Hannibal to get rid of my wife's purse?
Say you'd killed your wife and staged the crime scene in your home, trying to get us to think she was attacked by an outsider. But then you realized we were beginning to suspect you, so you wanted to plant something to get us to look outside again. That's the theory. But at this point, some of my guys are so sure you did it, they'd find any theory that fit. So let me help you. You and Hannibal lately?
I shook my head. You need to talk to my lawyer, Tanner Bolt.
Tanner Bolt? You sure that's the way you want to go, Nick? I feel like we've been pretty fair with you so far, pretty open. Bolt, he's a last-ditch guy. He's the guy guilty people call in.
Huh. Well, I'm clearly your lead suspect, Rhonda. I have to look out for myself.
Let's all get together when he gets in, okay? Talk this through.
Definitely. That's our plan.
A man with a plan, Boney said. I'll look forward to it.
She stood up, and as she walked away, she called back.
Witch Hazel's good for hives.
An hour later, the doorbell rang, and Tanner Bolt stood there in a baby blue suit, and something told me it was the look he wore when he went down south. He was inspecting the neighborhood, eyeing the cars and the driveways, assessing the houses. He reminded me of the Elliots, in a way, examining and analyzing at all times, a brain with no off switch.
Show me, Tanner said before I could greet him. Point me toward the shed. Do not come with me, and do not go near it again. Then you'll tell me everything.
We settled down at the kitchen table. Me, Tanner, and a just-woken Go, huddling over her first cup of coffee. I spread out all of Amy's clues like some awful tarot card reader. Tanner leaned toward me, his neck muscles tense.
Okay, Nick, make your case, he said. Your wife orchestrated this whole thing. Make the case.
He jabbed his index finger on the table.
Because I'm not moving forward with my dick in one hand and a wild story about a frame-up in the other. Unless you convince me. Unless it works.
I took a deep breath and gathered my thoughts. I was always better at writing than talking. Before we start, I said, You have to understand one very key thing about Amy. She is fucking brilliant. Her brain is so busy, it never works on just one level. She's like this endless archaeological dig. You think you've reached the final layer, and then you bring down your pick one more time, and you break through to a whole new mine shaft beneath, with a maze of tunnels and bottomless pits.
Fine, Tanner said. So?
The second thing you need to know about Amy is, she is righteous. She is one of those people who is never wrong, and she loves to teach lessons, dole out punishment.
Right, fine. So?
Let me tell you a story, one quick story. About 3 years ago, we were driving up to Massachusetts. It was awful road rage traffic, and this trucker flipped Amy off. She wouldn't let him in. And then he zoomed up and cut her off. Nothing dangerous, but really scary for a second. You know those signs on the back of trucks, "How am I driving?" She had me call and give them the license plate. I thought that was the end of it. 2 months later, I walked into our bedroom, and Amy was on the phone, repeating that license plate. She had a whole story. She was traveling with her 2-year-old, and the driver had nearly run her off the road. She said it was her 4th call. She said she'd even researched the company's routes so she could pick the correct highways for her fake near accidents. She thought of everything. She was really proud. She was going to get that guy fired. "Jesus, Nick," Go muttered.
"That's a very enlightening story, Nick," Tanner said. "It's just an example." "So now, help me put this all together," he said. "Amy finds out you're cheating. She fakes her death. She makes the supposed crime scene look just fishy enough to raise eyebrows. She screwed you over with the credit cards and the life insurance and your little man cave situation out back.
She picks an argument with me the night before she goes missing, and she does it standing near an open window so our neighbor will hear."
"What was the argument?"
"I am a selfish asshole. Basically the same one we always have. What our neighbor doesn't hear is Amy apologizing later, because Amy doesn't want her to hear that. I mean, I remember being astonished because it was the quickest makeup we've ever had. By the morning, she was freaking making me crepes for crying out loud." I saw her again at the stove, licking powdered sugar off her thumb, humming to herself. And I pictured me walking over to her and shaking her until...
"Okay, and the treasure hunt?" Tanner said. "What's the theory there?"
Each clue was unfolded on the table. Tanner picked up a few and let them drop. "Those are all just bonus fuck yous," I said. "I know my wife, believe me. She knew she had to do a treasure hunt, or it would look fishy. So she does it, and of course it has 18 different meanings. Look at the first clue. I picture myself as your student, with a teacher so handsome and wise. My mind opens up, not to mention my thighs. If I were your pupil, there'd be no need for flowers, maybe just a naughty appointment during your office hours. So hurry up, get going, please do, and this time I'll teach you a thing or two." It's pure Amy. I read this, I think, hey, my wife is flirting with me. No. She's actually referring to my infidelity with Andy. Fuck you, number one. So I go there to my office with Gilpin, and what's waiting for me? A pair of women's underwear. Not even close to Amy's size. The cops kept asking everyone what size Amy wore. I couldn't figure out why.
But Amy had no way of knowing Gilpin would be with you.
Tanner frowned. It's a damn good bet, Go interrupted. Clue one was part of the actual crime scene, so the cops would know about it. And she has the words office hours right in it. It's logical they'd go there with or without Nick.
So whose panties are they?
Tanner asked. Go squinched her nose at the word panties.
Who knows, I said. I'd assumed they were Andy's, but Amy probably just bought them.
The main point is they're not Amy's size. They lead anyone to believe something inappropriate happened in my office with someone who is not my wife. Fuck you, number two.
And if the cops weren't with you when you went to the office? Tanner asked. Or no one noticed the panties?
She doesn't care, Tanner. This treasure hunt, it's as much for her amusement as anything. She doesn't need it. She's overdone it all just to make sure there are a million damning little clues in circulation. Again, you've got to know my wife. She's a belt and suspenders type.
Okay. Clue two, Tanner said.
Picture me. I'm crazy about you. My future is anything but hazy with you. You took me here so I could hear you chat about your boyhood adventures, crummy jeans and visor hat. Screw everyone else. For us, they're all ditched. And let's sneak a kiss. Pretend we just got hitched.
This is Hannibal, I said. Amy and I visited there once, so that's how I read it. But it's also another place where I had relations with Andy. And you didn't get a red flag? Tanner said.
No, not yet. I was too moony about the notes Amy had written me. God, the girl knows me cold. She knows exactly what I want to hear. You're brilliant. You are witty. And how fun for her to know that she could fuck with my head like that still. Long distance, even. I mean, I was practically falling in love with her again.
My throat hitched for a moment.
The goofy story about her friend Inslee's half-dressed, disgusting baby. Amy knew that was what I had loved most about us back when I loved us. Not the big moments, not the romantic with capital R moments, but our secret inside jokes. And now, she was using them all against me.
And guess what? I said. They just found Amy's purse in Hannibal. I'm sure as hell someone can place me there. Hell, I paid for my tour ticket with my credit card. So again, here is this piece of evidence, and Amy making sure I can be linked to it.
What if no one found the purse? Tanner asked.
Doesn't matter, Ghost said. She's keeping Nick running in circles. She's amusing herself. I'm sure she was happy just knowing what a guilt trip it must be for Nick to be reading all these sweet notes when he knows he's a cheat and she's gone missing.
I tried not to wince at her disgusted tone. Cheat.
What if Gilpin were still with Nick when he went to Hannibal? Tanner persisted.
What if Gilpin were with Nick the whole time, so he knew that Nick didn't plant the purse then?
Amy knows me well enough to know I'd ditch Gilpin. She knows I wouldn't want a stranger watching me read this stuff, gauging my reactions.
Really? How do you know that?
I just do.
I shrugged. I knew. I just knew.
Clue three, I said, and pushed it into Tanner's hand. Maybe you feel guilty for bringing me here. I must admit it felt a bit queer, but it's not like we had the choice of many a place. We made the decision. We made this our space. Let's take our love to this little brown house. Give me some goodwill, you hot-loving spouse.
See, I misread this, thinking that bringing me here
meant Carthage, but again she's referring to my father's house, and...
It's yet another place where you fucked this Andy girl, Tanner said.
He turned to my sister.
Pardon the vulgarity.
Go gave a no problem.